You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 17th of November. Jazz and the Brooklyn Nets coming at you on this Friday. We'll look back at the last matchup and what do the Jazz need out of Derek Favors. Then we'll take a look at the Jazz pack and the National pack and ask any pack questions because it's a pack Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Ba-dum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, bringing you expertise, insight, geeky numbers, and taking you behind the curtain like nobody else can. Thanks very much for tuning in to Locked On Jazz. If this is a first time tuning into the program, welcome. We do it daily. If it's not your first time, thanks for being with us again. And, of course, please tell a bunch of friends about it. That's the only way the audience grows. Bunch of stuff, as I said, we'll look at the Brooklyn game. Probably should talk about last night's Boston Golden State game. That was pretty awesome. Really awesome. We'll do a pack, Jazz pack Friday, and we'll look around the league on pack. Pack is points above average created. It's my offensive statistic on how to evaluate players. Usually reveals some pretty interesting things that are taking place in the league. We'll do that. Special thanks to our sponsors today, Murdoch Hyundai over at 4646 South State Street. I've been driving a Hyundai now for quite a while, loving it, really enjoying it. I'm in the Ioniq right now, probably time to switch to a four-wheel drive car, it sounds like. It's also today's show is brought to you by Stevens Henniger College, an opportunity for you to take the next step in your employment. All right, let's get right to it. Jazz play Brooklyn tonight. Probably the game on this trip you got to win. You go back and look at the last matchup, and one of the key parts of that game to me is, of all weird things, that Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play. So Spencer Dinwiddie didn't play, and that meant that Isaiah Whitehead played their backup point guard, and they really fell apart with him on the floor. So, in his first stint, he closed the quarter, came in, played 3:16, was on the floor with actually D'Angelo Russell for a moment or two, and played with their backup unit, which was AC, LeVert, Harris, Whitehead. They went minus one. Then, in the second quarter, went minus 13 in the 3:25 he was on the floor. In the third quarter, same kind of thing. The first part was okay, and then they went minus four with him on the floor. He was a minus 15 in 13 minutes. Spencer Dinwiddie will play tonight. They've been better with Spencer Dinwiddie on the floor than they have been with D'Angelo Russell on the floor. That's created some sort of interesting kind of aspects to what people think are going on with Spencer Dinwiddie or D'Angelo Russell and whether he's actually as good as his numbers. And, you know, he's not a very good defensive player. And so there's some feeling out there that maybe, you know, D'Angelo Russell's numbers are pretty hollow. He's not having a positive impact on the team. Russell comes in his year away from L.A. and enjoying himself at 21 points a game, 6 assists, 4 turnovers. Not shooting it great, 46% from the field, 30% from three. And he's actually been slumping from three recently. In fact, my notes tell me that in the last 10 games, he's at 24% from three. But what the talk is in Brooklyn is much more that with Dinwiddie off the floor, they're minus 11. With Dinwiddie on the floor, they're plus 4. With D'Angelo Russell on the floor, they're minus 9. With D'Angelo Russell off the floor, they're positive. In fact, the only player on the Brooklyn Nets, D'Angelo Russell, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Timothy Mozgov, are the three that when they get off the floor, they're positive. Mozgov in the last game did not the last game against the Jazz, but in the last game by the Nets, suddenly came off the bench. Now, that was against Boston. Boy, was Boston great last night. Wow, do they fly around. It is something else. And so they may have decided that the way Boston flies around, Mozgov couldn't play. And maybe matched him with Aaron Baines. I was trying to look at that to see what happened there. But we'll see whether or not Trevor Booker gets that time. And remember, the Jazz started Thabo Sefolosha in that game instead of Jarebko. Jarebko's played pretty well for the Jazz. But because of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and I don't know if they knew Rudy was going to be on an extended period of time. Changes a little bit of what you're doing. But Mozgov came off the bench, and Trevor Booker started in the game against Boston. They got hammered. Well, they didn't get hammered. They got blasted early. They actually took the lead in the second and third quarter. Then Boston regained the lead and never gave it back. So they did not actually get hammered. From a Jazz standpoint, the question still seems to be, can we defend without Rudy? So the defensive rating in the last three games, in the 32 minutes a night that Derek Favors has been at center, is a 114.6. That would put the Jazz at last in the NBA defensively. This is strange. Now, this also, I mean, there could be a lot more factors than just Derek. So I'm not sure that isolating Derek here is really what we should be doing. But this has been the ongoing question now for three seasons, frankly, of whether or not the Jazz can defend with Derek Favors as a center. They couldn't do it last year. This year, they did it for a while because of the fact that they did it with Udo at the center and Favors at the four. And so the numbers looked okay, but now if you just take the last three games, and suddenly you're going up against top-level guys, it doesn't look good. Last season, that's what Derek did. Derek played the backup center for Rudy, and that was the same kind of question mark we had, was whether or not the Jazz could defend when Rudy Gobert was out of the game, and maybe more specifically when Derek Favors is at center. That's really the question. I could flip this here for a second. So the number, as I just said, in the last three games is let's call it 115. So it's really bad. I'm going to flip it here for a second. I'm going to get Derek Favors off the floor. And I put Udo on the floor and see what it is. I can do that. We have the technology to do these things. So and it's coming up, and I don't know the answer. With Udo on the floor, the defensive rating is a 106. Now it's second team. But that's average, or a little bit above average. It's a pretty dramatic difference. Maybe it's Sefolosha, who knows, that makes the difference. But that's what the Jazz have got to figure out how to do, is how to defend when Derek Favors is in the game as a five. The Jazz defensive rating in the last three games without Gobert is 94, which was our eighth best against Brooklyn, 122 against Minnesota, which was our worst, and 106.5 against the Knicks. That seems wrong, but I'll check. But that's what the computer spit out. What's interesting is it has the Jazz with a much better offensive rating than the Knicks in that game. It has the Jazz best offensive night, which also, though, would be interesting if that's true. And I can only believe it to be true because of the fact that it shows up on my computer. No, it's off a little. That's really strange. Maybe I have. Let's check something. I might have a. That last number I may have given you might have been wrong because there's something screwy. Yes, I only had first half up. So that would be why that is. So let me check that again. Jazz defensive rating in the last three games. We'll redo that. Against Brooklyn was a 105.8, 10th worst of the season. Minnesota, 113.8, 12th worst of the season. And against New York, 116.5, 14th worst of the season. So in the three games since Rudy's been out, our defense has been three of our five worst games of the year. Three of our six worst games of the year. Played 15 games. So that's a problem. Right? We hadn't had three games in a row of 100, over 100 even. That's worth keeping up. The offense had its best game of the year against Brooklyn, its eighth best game against Minnesota, its second best game against the Knicks. So the offense has actually gotten better. But the differential's not, obviously, so we've lost two of the three. Favors shooting is, I'm hearing the murmur from people that they want more from Derek, which might be fair. I don't know what you want, I guess, is what I'm at. I'm not sure. You know, he had the double, I guess the 2010 game would be nice every single time. One thing that's happened to Derek is he opened the year shooting the mid-range shot brilliantly, and since then has not. So since the sixth game of the year, Derek is suddenly not hitting that shot, is 4 of 17 on the mid-range. So Derek opened the year 12 of 23 on the mid-range and is since then 4 of 17. He's still very good around the rim. He's at 72%, which is right about his career number. Paint non-restricted area, which is post up, not quite getting to the basket, is not great. And when he straightens up on the mid-range, it's not good right now. Hit one against New York, hit one against Miami, hit two against Houston, but 4 of 17 since the 28th of October. But the defense is really the area where that's got to improve. Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Blake and the crew down there. And first thing I'd tell you is when I sat down with the Murdoch family and listened to the pride they had in what their family has done for 91 years, it's very clear Blake feels this obligation of upholding what the past generation has brought to Utah and did in Utah, and now he's doing through Hyundai. And Tyson's doing it over at Chevy and Woods Cross. But one of the things that they want to do is have their phrase they like is no regrets. And that no regrets means something to them. It means to them that they've done everything in their power as the local dealer to make sure you get the best experience. So 5-day guarantee, car washes for life, extra hours, all these things that they can do to try to make sure that your experience is as good as it can possibly be, right? They can't give you a car for free. They can do the best they can. Safety inspections for life, car washes for life, price match guarantee. Then there's the brand Hyundai that we're talking about. So at 4646 South State Street is Blake and the crew there. Hyundai gives you the America's best 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty for Hyundai Assurance. That should tell you something in the confidence they have. And then I would just tell you it's been amazingly eye-opening to drive a Hyundai. It's not a brand I would have ever thought of. It's not a car. I was actually meeting with a guy for breakfast yesterday, actually former guy we worked with through the network at Audio Boom, and he's like, yeah, I got the Murdoch Santa Fe. I got the Hyundai Santa Fe. It's great. Like the pride. If you're a Hyundai owner, what's happened is you've done the research. You've gone and checked it out. You suddenly realize the price and the value that you can get for it, and now you have amazing pride in the fact you did it. And when you meet somebody who else has done the same thing, it's like an immediate bonding moment in time. Kind of cool. That's over at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. If that's not a brand you would have regularly put on your list, I would suggest strongly doing so. All right, let's do a little Pack Friday with the Jazz, and then we'll do National. And this is going to probably be a bit eye-opening and why the Jazz are struggling offensively or not, or just back it up. And then I think the other question always that I ask is, you know, is there a trend here that is unusual? Is there something we can look at that says, oh, well, this player should get better? We had some false hopes on Ricky Rubio, I think. Rubio, by the way, is on the injured list now. Not sure he goes tonight. So far, our best pack player is Rudy Gobert at 2.4, which is interesting that our offense has gotten better without him. Probably is a spacing issue more than anything else. Cephalosha is positive at 0.6. Derebko is positive at 0.4. Ingles is positive at 0.4. Alec is even. It's terrific. It's a huge bump for Alec. Alec last year was minus 0.7. And the year before was minus 0.5. Alec at even is terrific and probably is earning himself more and more playing time. Rodney Hood's a minus 0.2. So he's a below average. Well, last year he was a minus 0.7 with all of his injuries. And the year before that, he was a even offensive player. He's never been above average. Udo's a minus 0.3. Favors is a minus 0.3. Which is a step in the right direction from the 0.8 that minus 0.8 he was last year, but not the positive 0.3 he was 2 years ago. Neto's a minus 0.4. Rubio's a minus 1. And what's interesting there is that's low for him. He's usually gone to the free throw line, not used as many possessions, and not had as large a negative impact on the team as he's having right now, because this gets back into kind of what his role is, how many shots he should take. Last year, he was a minus 0.3. He went to the line 12.9% of his possessions. This year, he's a minus 1, and he's going to the line at 11% of his possessions. So it's not as though he's not going to the line. He shot a 3 last year, 27% of his possessions. Or this year, last year, he shot at 20%. So he's picked up his 3-point shooting. Sorry, I'm trying to look at something. That's interesting. He turned the ball over 20% of his possessions last year that he used. He's at 21 this year. He used 10 scoring opportunities a game last year. This year he's using 13. So it's up. His usage is up. Actually, what's more revealing is let me make sure I have this right. His scoring opportunities per 40 minutes last year was 12.6. This year it's 17. Rodney Hood and Donovan Mitchell are our number one possession users, followed by Rubio next, Royce O'Neal and his little time on the floor, and then Joe Johnson, his time on the floor, then Derek Favors, that's probably right, then Rudy Gobert. And Tabo, Joe, and Jonas are all kind of together. Continuing down, Tony Bradley is played almost none. Royce O'Neal almost none. Joe Johnson was minus 1.4. And Donovan Mitchell is a minus 2.2. Last 10 games, trying to give Donovan a little bit of a see if there's any. Last 10 games, Donovan's a minus 0.8. Cephalosha's a 0.7. Terebko's a 0.4. Udo's even. Alec is even. Ingles is a minus 0.6. Last 10 games, Joe Ingles is shooting 40%. My concern on Joe Ingles is how his body holds up during 31 minutes of every night. It's just a lot to ask. Favors is a minus 0.7 over the last 10 games, which is not good. Really not good for big. Rubio holds at minus 1. Rodney's a minus 1.1, despite the consistency of scoring. He's got that 0 for 11 game in there. That'll hold you back for a while. So those are a lot of numbers. Is there a takeaway here? I mean, I think the takeaway is kind of obvious. We don't have a high-volume, efficient offensive player, which is what you have to have to be a good offensive team. I mean, so that's really, truly the first takeaway. Rudy covers some of that up with his 10, 11 scoring opportunities, but you probably need somebody else to do that. The other one I would say, though, is that maybe that, you know, let's keep an eye on Rod. It might not be as bad as it feels at times. And it's gotten better. He had a great night the other night. And the scoring night in and night out is interesting. And going back to what we found earlier this week when we looked at Hayward and the burden Hayward had as his first time as a offensive guy and how difficult that was. Now, the thing on Hayward is that Hayward went to the line 13% of his possessions. And Rodney Hood is going to the line 8% of his possessions. And that's a huge difference. That allowed Hayward to cover up some of his brutal shooting nights. Whereas Rodney, because he doesn't go to the line as much, though he's had some moments, and he's going to the line more this year. Last year, Rodney went to the line. Why can I never find Rodney areas? Because last year, Rodney went to the line 6.5% of his possessions. This year, he's up over 8. So he's going to the line more, which is good, but it's not as big a number. That was always Hayward's saving grace, is that he was shooting threes and going to the line with the right likes of a unique group that was Gallinari, Harden, himself. And it always kind of was able to cover up his bad shooting nights, which is not something necessarily that Rodney can do. All right, we'll do National Pack, here in a second. But if you're heading to work today, or maybe you're done for the week, or you just finished a crappy week, then... and you're feeling you're on kind of a hamster wheel with no answers, have you considered Stevens Henniger College? Stevens Henniger College is there to help students get a better job sooner. It's maybe school wasn't right for you the first time through. Maybe the whole wide-ranging school's not right for you, but instead, I can find a job that directs me toward programming or computer science or HR or nursing or business, very specifically for the sole purpose of giving me the career placement skills that I need and open up opportunities, and maybe this is what will get me to do education. Why Stevens Henniger? 4-week classes. They have a trial period for you for 3 weeks where no cost, where you can sit down and see if it works for you, and they can see if you work for them. In addition, financial aid planning that sits down with you from the very beginning has no other cost, so you know exactly what it's going to be. If you're missing that degree, you know more now. You want to try to make the next step. Stevens Henniger may be the answer for you. Flexible, narrow focus classes, small classes, and frankly, their whole purpose is to help you get through the process and get you out in a better position than you came in. Text keyword 88588. That's 88588, or visit uneducation.com. That's uneducation.com. Keyword 88588, and see if Stevens Henniger is the answer for you to take the next step. I know you can do it. Pack Friday. Let's get it going. All right. Who is the best offensive player in the NBA at this point of the season? And crazily, it's still LeBron James. This does not have last night's game in it, by the way, because the next name might not be where it is. Then Steph Curry. Then Kevin Durant. What's interesting is numbers are all still high because we have a small sample size, but they're coming back down. So usually we have about three players above. Last year in the 16-17 season, we had two players above three. In the 15-16 season, we had two players above three. They were both above four. They were Durant and Curry. Right now, we have three players above three. LeBron, Steph, and Durant is the best offensive players in the game. Adetokounmpo is fourth. Anthony Davis is fifth. The newly signed Robert Covington is sixth. Otto Porter is seventh and doing it with only shooting 32% of his shots from three and only 4% of his shots from the free throw line. James Harden is 7th. Clint Capella is 8th. Al Horford is 9. Karl Anthony Towns is 10. It's a pretty good group. The top have come to the top. Aaron Gordon is 11. Klay Thompson, 12. Evan Fournier, 13. Enes Kanter, 14. Rudy Gobert, 15. Steven Adams, 16. Sabonis, 17. Kyle Korver, 18. Wow, Kyle. Tyreek Evans in Memphis, probably the reason they're surviving, is Tyreek Evans is averaging 19 points a game, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Valanciunas in Toronto is 19th. And then Kristaps Porzingis is next. And those are the only players above 2. Which is big. Like, if you're 2 and you have one of those guys, it helps you win an awful lot. Nothing particularly surprising there. Anthony Davis is going to line 16% of his possessions. Curry is actually going to line 14% of his possessions, which is really high. James Harden is only going to line 13.5% of his possessions, which is interesting. I think that's down from last year. Let me check it. Yeah, Harden last year went to the free throw line 16.3%. Steph last year only went 8.7%, and this year is at 13.9%. That might not be sustainable. It's worth keeping an eye on. How about Al Horford in Boston? How about Boston? Were they incredible last night? Holy smokes. Their defense is just swarming. It's everywhere. It's every passing lane. It's cutting off every motion. It was just awesome. And the athleticism and the length and the commitment. But the youth and athleticism, boy, that's real. And their defensive numbers this year are through the roof. Their defensive numbers, and it was kind of like everyone was waiting, at least I was waiting, let's see what happens when they play this game. And so they played this game, and they are that good. Their defensive rating is a 95.4, which is probably the best, would be the best we've ever seen. Oklahoma City is third at 97.6. That's incredible. Oklahoma City's having this kind of mediocre start with that defense. Portland's defense is a 99.5, which is stunning. The Lakers is the fourth best in the NBA. Golden State, 5. San Antonio, 6. Utah, 7. Only the Lakers and the Jazz have a negative rating in this group, and they have the same, negative 2.5. Detroit is 8. Memphis, 9. Worst defenses in the league, by the way, Cleveland, Sacramento, Phoenix, Dallas, Minnesota, Indiana, Brooklyn. Not a huge surprise there. Boston's offense is not anything special. Golden State's offense came back to life, and Houston's made a jump last night. They narrowed that 6-point gap we talked about earlier this week in a hurry in one night. Jazz offense, by the way, fifth worst in the NBA. Dallas, Lakers, Sacramento, and the Bulls are there. All right, let's go back to National Pack. Let's go look at the ugly side of things. Lonzo Ball is the worst offensive player in the league. He's shooting 30% from the field, 23% from three, and only got on the line 4.7%. He's a negative 4.7 pack. He better straighten that out. That is historically bad. Marcus Smart is a minus 3.5. Ersan Ilyasova, who I don't feel like has played a lot. I don't have my games played in front of me. It's minus 3.3. Justin Holiday, minus 2.8. Chris Dunn, minus 2.8. That Chris Dunn thing is just not going to work. De'Aaron Fox is a minus 2.7. It's going to be fine. Tyler Ulis is minus 2.7. I'm not convinced he's an NBA player. Josh Jackson in Phoenix, minus 2.5. Don't worry about rookies on this. Lance Stevenson, Kay Felder, Michael Carter Williams. I need to get my games played up. Yeah, Michael Carter Williams only played 3 games. Dennis Smith would be the next one that pops up here, minus 2.3. I think we're going to see our kid here in a second. Donovan Mitchell, minus 2.2. This is like the rookie list. Eric Bledsoe's minus 2.2. Worth keeping an eye on. Malik Monk, minus 2. It's all the rookies. I mean, that is incredible. The worst offensive players in the league right now are Lonzo Ball, Marcus Smart, Justin Holiday, Chris Dunn, De'Aaron Fox, Tyler Ulis, Josh Jackson, Lance Stevenson, Dennis Smith, Donovan Mitchell, Eric Bledsoe, Malik Monk, then Dwayne Wade. Isaiah Whitehead, who we mentioned earlier in the show, and then Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook's having a brutal year. He's not going to line either. He's at minus 10.8. Before I wrap today, I just wanted to give a shout out to Devin Cash. I got another email from someone who used Devin Cash saying how great he was. And it's just the coolest thing to me. I got a few guys who went over to the Grip 6. I know there's sponsors on it. The show didn't used to have sponsors, and I know it's a pain, and you're like, golly, Locke. Hey, sorry. But that's a little bit of how this works and what the network is, and, you know, hopefully we're giving you good enough content that it's worth sitting through still a small amount of ads compared to what you would get on a radio or a TV station. But what I really love is the kind of community and bond and connection we have, that you kind of believe me enough that I take the time to find out who these people are and investigate it and go meet with them. And I had a really cool meeting over at Intercap the other day, which is a cool mortgage company. I'm actually going to do a mortgage with them, so I get the full experience of what it's like. That's what I try to do. Devin Cash was the very first guy we had in this whole deal who did that. And I just keep getting people who, every time they use Devin, adore him. So Devin Cash of Equity Real Estate, I just want to give him a shout-out. It's not really an ad, but just give him a shout-out. So 801-759-1495 if you want. I guess now it's become one. So if you want to use Devin for your real estate, or if you're moving, Devin says he'll help you with the move to get you set up. If he's like basically Chris Paul's brother at that point. he can, if you haven't seen those commercials. Or if you want just a market analysis, he can do that for you. It's 801-759-1495. That's 801-759-1495. And whether it's from the email I got from Ryan and Natalie, or Tim and Whitney, or Kyle, or Zach Campbell along the way, or Charity and Ryan, it's cool. Did I say that twice? Or are there just two Ryans? Yeah, just two Ryans. It's just cool to see. So thank you guys for supporting Devin. And Devin, thank you for the great work. I want to get that shout out. 801-759-1495. That wraps up our week of Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. I look forward to talking with you from the floor in Brooklyn, on the floor with Ron Boone. Then we have Orlando coming your direction on Saturday. We'll be in Philly for Locked On Jazz on Monday. And then we get to come home and see our families. Hope you're doing great. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Thanks so much for your support of Locked On Jazz, and I will talk to you soon.